Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, it is the much-anticipated yearly occurrence. Robbie Calland over at UpRock Sports and I are going to dive deep into NBA win total over-unders because if there's one thing that Robbie and I love doing, it's gambling. Robbie, how you doing, man?
I'm great. I'm fired up.
Isn't it just the best? We get to...
Yeah, I love win total time. I've been having this year there's the added math element of a 72 game season, which is fun. Keeps it spicy.
Yeah, trying to figure out the math on this has been fun. So like we're going to start with the Eastern Conference in this episode. The next episode will be the Western Conference. And like the Milwaukee Bucks are sitting here at 49.5 wins right now, mm-hmm. and I'm like, that seems drastically low to me. Yes. Like that's correct. It feels like the math has not caught up to Vegas yet in terms of like the 10 game reduction to me. Does that feel that way to you?
Yeah, I mean,
or maybe we're just dumb. Like that could be
well,
it.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's always a possibility. And like, look, like I'm not surprised that the Bucks number is lower than it would have been. You know, I mean, even factoring in the math, just because of the way the offseason shook out, and you know, they lost a little bit of depth and. Have some questions, but like I don't know. Like I've got a couple working theories, and we'll get to them because my most of my feelings and stronger feelings are on the Eastern Conference. The West is a cluster, and we'll get to that next episode. And it's much harder to kind of parse out where you really like teams. You kind of have to plant your flag, I think, a little more there. The East, I have more feelings about.
Yeah,
and I'll get to some of my theories that I'm working with on the Eastern Conference, but. Yeah, I mean, with the Bucks at the top, I mean, you're talking about, you know, 49.5 wins. Basically, you're projecting this would be in the 57, 58-ish wins in a normal season. And, yep. Like, this is a team that's kind of smoked that usually the last few years. And I do like the over here. Like, I know it kind of feels square, but, you know, I've mentioned this elsewhere, but it's just like, what has ever made you feel like Mike Budenholzer is ever going to learn a lesson and put it into like practice on the basketball court? Anything ever?
No.
Once? Okay. Then guess what? They're going to be a really good regular season team again. And we're going to have the same discussion about rotations come playoff time. Right?
Well, and frankly, it's not like they're going to be better this year.
They're going to be good. Yeah. They have, well, like the question is like, okay, if you lost a touch of depth, because like, Eric Bledsoe was good in the regular season, and he's like garbage in the postseason, right? And then you lose George Hill, who was somehow the best shooter in the league last year, which was weird in the regular season. So like, I can understand some of the depth conversation, but like, yeah, like Drew is awesome. Like, I think we kind of we talked about everybody was like, oh my God, they gave up so much for him. And like, yeah, but he's also really good and has long been underrated. And they're still just going to be a dominant defensive team in the regular season because you're not going to be able to scheme for them, as always happens, and they're going to terrorize people with length. And, like, their offense is going to be good. Like, yeah, you're leaning a lot on Dante DiVincenzo, and that's a question for the playoffs. That's not a regular season question.
Can I just, like, question that real quick? Because, like, Bryn Forbes is really good.
Like, well, sure. I had this conversation with Brett. It's like Bryn Forbes is like he's been learning the ways of Patty Mills for like years now, and he's just going to come in and be that dude who's like he's going to help you out.
Yeah, like Bryn Forbes has been a starter on a borderline playoff team for the last 2 years, and I feel like everyone is just neglecting that. And then you're going to put him in a place where Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, and Giannis are better than DeMar DeRozan and yes. LaMarcus Aldridge by leaps and bounds. Sure. So he's going to get even more open three-pointers because he's really good at moving off of the ball. Right. He's going to shoot
George Hill looks.
Yeah, he's going to shoot 43% from three and average 10 points a game. Like, it's not going to be – he's a worse ball handler and creator than George Hill. Like, you probably right. don't want him as the backup point guard necessarily. Basically, right. they took the $11 million that George Hill was making and split it into two players for DJ Augustine and Bryn Forbes.
Right.
And those guys are making, what, like, I think it's $9 million this year?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because DJ is at, you know, seven or whatever.
And, like, inherently that's less valuable to have two players doing one job versus one player doing one job. But DJ Augustine's a better ball handler than George Hill is. So you can mix and match whenever you need more ball handling on the court. And whenever it's shooting that you need, you can mix and match, let Drew play point, share the lead duties with Giannis. And then, but Bryn Forbes is a floor spacer. Like the upgrade from Bryn Forbes, like over Kyle Korver is pretty drastic, I think, at this point in their careers.
For a two way, especially. I mean, just for what you like, having a guy on floor. And again, like the questions for the Bucks, and this has been the case for what, 3 years now? The question for the Bucks is all about the playoffs.
Yep.
No regular season questions about this team. This team's gonna win like 53-19 is like, I think, a very reasonable expectation for this team.
I mean, they went 56-17 last year.
Right.
So like basically the same number of games, just one less. We're thinking that the Bucks are going to lose 7 more games than they won last year? Like, that seems...
No.
That seems strange to me, given that... Just given what we know about how good Giannis is. Like, if there's one superstar in the NBA that is probably going to play close to 72 games...
It's Giannis.
It's probably Giannis. Like, and we should have a conversation about how the... how the possibility of load management will really affect a lot of these teams.
Oh, because that's you have to cook it into a bunch of them, but yeah. The Bucks are not one of those teams. And also, like, because here's the other thing. It's not like Giannis plays a lot of minutes. Like, they've been doing this for years where he plays 32 minutes a night, 33 minutes a night, and they bludgeon teams. Like, this isn't new.
Right.
For the regular season. The question, as always, is, will Bud shorten the rotation in the playoffs? And will Bud play his guys the minutes they need to play to, like, have a chance to win? And also, there are questions about Giannis specifically. Like, can he stop trying to shoot threes and can he build some counters and mid-range stuff in? Because that's where he can really terrorize a defense. Like, if he has some stuff where when you pack the paint and you say, we're not letting you get to the restricted area – can you do some floater stuff? Can you add some little short mid-range, that sort of thing? That's more valuable, in my opinion, to Giannis come playoff time than being able to knock down a three that is just this phantom thing everybody thinks he needs to be able to do. Because, like, what we've seen is he gets stymied and kind of runs into trouble and ends up in these weird situations where, like, they're sending three guys at him at the rim. And it's like, if he can have some more post stuff and, like, just outside the restricted area short mid-range – you open up so many opportunities because then you're like, okay, you come over. I can stop. I can pop right here from 8 feet, or
yep.
I'm just going to stop and draw you out, and then I have more passing lanes.
Yep.
But that's, again, it's playoff questions.
Yeah, it's playoff questions. It's not regular season questions. Like, this roster is still really – it's actually just ridiculously good. This is a no doubt over, in my opinion.
A very rare start to us for having the no doubt. We're going to sit here, and I always, whenever I do these, I'm always like, look, like, we're going to do a lot of passing, and we're going to do a lot of, like, leans and not suggestions, but, like, rare for us to have a no doubter for both of us on the first one.
Yeah, and just one final note here. Just, I want everyone to raise those glasses to Larry Sanders and his cap hold of $1.8 million still being on this cap sheet. Shout out Larry Sanders.
Turn up, Larry.
Love it. I absolutely love it.
Milwaukee's Bobby Bonilla.
Milwaukee's Bobby Bonilla. They have $5 million on this cap sheet from Larry Sanders and John Lohr, and I love it. I love it.
Legend.
Legends
of Milwaukee.
So we started with Milwaukee. We jumped right in. I just want to note for the listeners that we're going to go in order of essentially what Vegas has as the conference projection right now. So Milwaukee at 49.5 is number one. Boston at 45.5 is number two. Brooklyn at 45.5 is number three. Philadelphia at 45.5 is number four. Miami at 44.5. We're going to go down that way so that we can knock out the higher end teams at the top here, because look, we're journalists, sort of.
Sure.
Like,
well,
you know, a little bit, and
we're contentsmen.
Contentsman. I like
prefer,
that.
I prefer that to journalist.
Yeah, I do too. It's too stuffy.
On occasion, I do a journalism, but it's few and far between.
Yeah, I am.
For the most part, I'm a contentsman.
I just want to have conversations and create content.
That's right.
Journalism is not for me.
Every once in a while, I'll do like real world reporting, and it's not my scene, man. I always joke about this because like I don't like bothering people.
Yeah.
And that is like the number one job of a journalist. And so that's why I say I'm not one. I have phone numbers for people. I could call people. But yeah. Like, I don't like getting phone calls. Out of the blue, like, whenever I actually do some report, I always like text somebody first. I'm like, hey, man, it's me. Is there a time I can call you? Like, I know people that just cold call folks.
Oh, to be frank, like, I do that. And it's a problem because. Now I'm over in Australia and it's like a FaceTime audio call and I can basically only call people that have iPhones. So if you ever want to not hear from me, go get a Samsung, basically.
Hey, same. That's what I've got. So I'm off the hook here. but yeah, like I always text first. Like I'll be like, hey, like, is it cool? Like I got your number and like, can I give you a call? Let me know what time works. Like I'm available whenever. Cause like, I just, you know, like, so like, I'm not real good at timely stuff. So, you know, like I try to be respectful of the people. I'm like, if you gave me your number, you weren't expecting me to call you. So, like, I'm not going to be like, hey man, like, can I get a quote for the story? Nah, I'm good.
Yeah. No. I'm good. No, I don't think we need that. We're not.
So these are the Westgate numbers we're pulling off of Vegas Insider currently. So I don't know if these were openers and they've moved. So just, you know, be aware of that.
Yeah, they've been updated as of December 9th. We are recording this on December 10th. So look, if they've moved around a little bit, like apologies ahead of time.
But you can do the math. You know what you're doing.
Right.
If it's a game, so what?
Right. And look, at the end of the day, Westgate is the number because Westgate holds a near and dear place in Robbie and I's heart, as always.
Sure does.
Last year.
He rules football.
Yeah. Last year, I forced Robbie, Brad Roland, and Martin Rickman to follow me to Westgate in order to watch Essendon play Australian rules football against the Sydney Swans. And right in the middle of the game, Kawhi Leonard decided to sign with the Clippers.
That's correct.
And that resulted in a fury of content from Robbie Martin and Brad and resulted in
there and yelled at a TV.
Me continuing to yell at the TV whenever Ratio Fantasia fucked up.
it was pretty incredible stuff. I ran like a 4.42 40 to the card. it was great. It was great. Like I think we were the first people with a post up because everybody, it was like, what? It was like 11 p.m. local, like close to it.
Yeah.
In like Vegas. Everybody's out at dinner because all the summer league games. But this was the night of the earthquake game.
Yeah.
With the Pelicans. We were at Raising Cane's when that happened.
The night that Zion caused an earthquake.
That's right. And so everybody was out at dinners and out at parties and doing all this stuff. So nobody could write. But because Sam had brought us to the book at Westgate, which shouts to the super book, my home away from home. I miss you dearly. I'll see you when there's a vaccine.
Are you going full Stephen A. Smith voice right now?
Yes. Yes. I will be there soon. As soon as possible. And so like there's free Wi-Fi in the book. We cracked the laptops and we got the cracking on content. It was a good night for our fair little website. Thanks to Sam Vecini dragging us there.
Yeah, I am an honorary...
I had already lost some money at the table, so I had just come back.
I am an honorary UpRox member for having saved you guys some real money and made you guys some real money back in the summer of 2019.
You did.
All right, so let's jump back into Boston here. Boston is the second team we're going to talk about. Boston's at 45.5, and I don't have a strong feel on this number. So we went pretty strong on Milwaukee. I don't really have a great feel for this. So the number would be 45-27, 46-26 for people that are.
They went 48-24 last year in the same number of games.
Yeah. And.
But.
Where I'm struggling with this is just trying to figure out how healthy Kemba Walker is.
Yeah, so that's the question. If he can't go for, if he plays 50 games or fewer, this is an under for me. Right?
I agree.
Because like you're talking about, they, you know, they brought in Jeff Teague, who I think is an adequate backup. I'm interested to see what's left in the tank because his last couple years in Minnesota and Atlanta haven't been very good.
Yeah, I think
he's also
there might be just a little bit of washed there.
There's a little bit of washed, but like as a backup, I think he's serviceable. And like he's also one of those guys. He's got George Hill vibes where like on a good team he can help you, on a bad team he's like detrimental because he doesn't give a damn.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because like Jeff is like one of those guys that like, all right, I'm trying to figure out how to word. Jeff isn't like crazy about basketball, you know, like he's good at it, so he does it. But like he likes video games and wrestling more than basketball, and so like when he's not engaged by like winning, I think it's very easy for him to just really set it in cruise control.
So
that wouldn't happen in Boston.
That would not happen in Boston. And
however, if he has to start 25 games, that's problematic.
He might have to start 25 games unless Peyton Pritchard beats him out.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Because
how about that pick?
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. Like, Peyton's a good... Like, I voted Peyton third in my National Player of the Year vote last year.
Well, yeah, I mean...
Like, sure. I think he's an awesome college player, and he fits everything that Danny Ainge looks for from, like, a toughness perspective.
Sure.
But, man, like, I don't know that I trust Peyton Pritchard first year in the NBA games. Either.
He's not going to help you win games, and that's always the thing. It's like... So yeah, I mean it's a
so here would be my question for you. Let's say that they go Marcus Smart at the point, and then Jaylen and Jason Tatum, and then what? Like you have to start Daniel Tice because I think he's better than Tristan Thompson at this stage. Like
I think it's going to be matchup dependent there.
Yeah, and do you go Grant Williams? Do you go Shimi Ojeleye, or do you try and get like? A Romeo Langford on the court if you hope that he's taken a leap. The sneaky guy here is Tremont Waters. Like, he was really good in the G League last year. Like, there's a real chance that he might just
good. They might need a shooting in some of these lineups. Like, you're talking about that line. If you're talking about a lineup with Tice, Grant, and Smurf on the floor.
Yeah,
like, that's not great spacing for the J-Boys.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're going to have to get creative when Kemba's not able to play. And that's going to be the case till January, and then we'll see where they're at. I mean, we know these knee things when there's inflammation and fluid buildup and stuff like they don't just go away. You know, that's a management thing. And when we talked about how we're going to have to consider the load management with Wintos this season, Boston's a team that you definitely have to consider. On top of that, and this is a theory that I'm working on with a lot of these East teams, is when I'm kind of on the fence. This is a season where a higher percentage of your games in the Eastern as an Eastern Conference team are coming against the West than ever before because you don't get the four games against conference opponents and then four games against somebody else. So you're playing a higher percentage of your games against a deeper conference that we're going to talk about and how we're trying to figure out how to separate teams. There's fewer of those easy wins. You're not getting – so for Boston, you lose an extra game against the Knicks,
yeah. Right?
You know, if you're talking about the Central teams, you lose an extra game against Detroit and Cleveland. The Southeast teams, you lose a game against Charlotte and Atlanta, although Atlanta obviously is going to be better this year. But Charlotte and Brooklyn and Orlando and these teams. And so my working theory is that takes a couple wins away. And so when I'm looking at totals, if I'm on the fence, my lean is going to be under.
Yeah.
Because of that, because there's a few. So like take Boston, for example. We're talking about. They were They were 2.5 wins over this last year. Even if they're the same, you can probably take 3 wins maybe off the board just because they're not going to get that Knick game, maybe not an extra bowl game, whatever it was. And you're talking about Brooklyn being better in their division. That might take a win off. So again, this is why I lean under. I wouldn't necessarily sit. This is not a lock. This is not me telling you to go do it. But this is going to be a theme that you're going to hear from me in this Eastern Conference, which is higher percentage game against the West, West being better and deeper, fewer easy wins, going to lean under.
So the Kemba Walker thing, I just want to note, in Boston's playoff run, they played 17 games. Boston, in the first nine games, Kemba Walker averaged 22 points on 49% from the field, 90 from the line, 31 from three, five assists. In his final eight games of the playoffs, Kemba Walker averaged 17 points a night on 38% from the field, 30% from three, 76 from the free throw line, and under five assists per game. So it kind of speaks to what Robbie, I think, was saying there, where these knee injuries do tend to fester when it comes to inflammation. And I think that that's why Boston is trying to get a hold on it early in the season by, you know, hopefully giving him some time out. But I really worry that if this doesn't get handled early in the season and like it just continues to get inflamed, like it's probably going to get worse and he probably is going to have to sit quite a few games.
Right.
So, yeah, I think under here, I don't feel great about it though, because if Kemba does play 45 or if he does play 55 to 65 games, this is probably pretty close to an over, I think.
Yeah.
So I would not bet this one, but I'm
comfortable with
an under if you really think Kemba is going to play like 25 games this year.
Yeah. Same page here.
Yeah. The Brooklyn Nets, 45.5. So that'd be 45 and 27. There are two minds here when it comes to the Brooklyn Nets. The first one is that the Brooklyn Nets are going to experience load management at a higher level, I think, than any team. Like, they're going to manage Kyrie. They're going to manage KD coming back from the Achilles. They're going to try and manage DeAndre Jordan, I'm sure, just due to his age. But I think that that is being worked into this number. And this team does have, like, they're one of the few teams that has a real depth of creation and ball handlers where they can sit KD for a game and say, hey, Karis, hey, Spencer, you have to go out and get us points. You have to go out and lead the offense. And I think that they can do that. But the problem is that, like, we just have no idea how this is going to work. There's a chance that, like, this implodes in a real way because, like, look, half the team is seemingly on the trade block right now if Houston decides to trade James Harden, right? They have all of these ball handlers that probably aren't going to work all that well together. Like, Caris LeVert, he improved as a three-point shooter last year, but he wants the ball in his hand. Like, Spencer Dinwiddie wants the ball in his hand.
Needs the ball in his hands to be effective.
Yeah, so this is, for me, like, I think a lot of people are going to go under on this number. This is a stay away for me because I don't know how this entire situation is going to work. Like, I think there is a real chance that, like, it goes really well because this team is just obscenely talented in a number of ways. Like, going out and getting Bruce Brown is like an eighth man. Like, that's a really good move. They have Landry Shamet as like a floor spacer that can take up those minutes that Joe Harris doesn't play. They have real talent here. Like, I really like Nick Claxton long term. Like, if he can shore up some minutes whenever DeAndre Jordan doesn't play and he can play 18 minutes a night behind Jared Allen, that wouldn't stun me if he can do that. So, like, this is a pure stay away for me. If you made me lean, I think I would lean under, but it's a tough one. I think this is one of the toughest numbers on the board for me, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't bet it just because we don't, like, you can't tell me how many games Kyrie's going to play, how many games KD is going to play, because KD's not playing back-to-backs. They haven't announced that, but, like, there's no way he's playing back-to-backs, at least for this first half of the season. On top of that, I'm with you. I think part of the reason that they stayed put with everybody is they know they're going to have to do that. So they know that they might need to drag this out at least until the deadline before they kind of try to go all in and figure out what they need around KD and Kyrie. Like, I think they want to see those two together and then figure out, okay, what can we get for Spencer? What can we get for Karis? Maybe it's James Harden. Maybe it's just going somewhere else. But I'm with you. Like, I think they're going to hold this together to the deadline because they're going to need to just eat up some games where they're not going to have one of their stars. The question for me, and this is where my biggest curiosity with this team is, they're going to be a nightmare offensively to deal with. Like, they're just going to be elite. Like, even if KD loses some burst coming off the Achilles, he's still the best shooting seven-footer we've ever seen, and he can get his shot whenever without being, you know, able to get to the rim at will. Like, he's still going to be an elite offensive player. The question is, KD is by far of their best players. KD is by far the best defender, but we don't know if that's still going to be the case because his length is tremendous. When he was in Golden State, he was in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation because of what he's able to do on the wing, at the rim, kind of everywhere. But if he's not able to have that same lateral quickness, that same burst to get out to shooters, that same, you know, recovery time, help side time, all of that, they don't have anybody else. I mean, who's their next best defender? It's probably Jared Allen, who is not good against stronger bigs, and Bruce Brown, who's not going to play a ton. I'm fascinated to see how they figure out how to piece together this defense because KD's so important to that, but he might not be there this year. And that's why I'm with you on leaning under. But again, this is a firm stay away because you could talk me into this being a 50-win team easily if everything clicks. Like, they're that good. But also, like you said, this could implode. Guys could check out, you know, like Spencer and Karis if their minutes are wildly wavering from, you know, nights where KD sits to nights where he's in the game. And one night you're playing 32 minutes, the next night you're playing 18. It can be hard to stay engaged.
The thing that people miss with KD is, like, I mean, you've seen him, like, sitting front row. Like, I've been front row for KD games and, like, seeing him play pickup and stuff. His balance is the most insane skill.
Oh, he's obscene.
Like,
that's why he does that little spinny crap before games where he, like, spins on one foot and shoots.
Yeah.
Like, it's part of it. Like, he's going to be fine offensively. I, like, have no worries about him offensively.
It's absolutely crazy. Like, the way that he can, like, land on one leg and stay completely straight up and balanced and then just stop and pop like it's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the most incredible skills I've ever seen on a basketball court. And that is not an exaggeration. Like, it's one of those things that people just don't look at. But the way that he moves is just so different than, frankly, guys that are like 6'5" struggle with this, mm-hmm. let alone someone who's 7 foot tall like Kevin Durant is. Like, it is unfreaking believable how good Kevin Durant is. But I'm not breaking news there either. So I'm with you on the under. I'm with you on leaning that way, but this is a firm stay away, I think, for both of us. Let's go to the Philadelphia 76ers. They're at 45.5.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like this number a little bit. I think I like it. I think I like the over. Talk me out of it, Robbie.
Can't do it. This is one of my favorites on the east side.
Okay. Talk me through it.
All right. So here's the thing. Last year, what did we talk about all year with this Sixers team? How much of a disaster they were. How nothing was fitting right. How they just looked bad. It was ugly all the time. They went 43-30.
Yeah.
Okay. They were a disaster, and they were 2.5 wins under this total already. They now have a roster that makes sense.
Yeah.
I still wish I could have been. I want audio or video of the first time Daryl sat down with Elton and was like, "What the hell was this?" And just pointed to a roster sheet and just said, "Why? Why?"
I can't tell if you're doing a Nicolas Cage right now. Or if you're
doing that, the meme of like the pastor who does the why. Why? Because like they didn't have anybody that could shoot. They had nobody that could shoot around Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. How the hell does that make any sense?
Yeah. No, it's bad.
And here's the thing. I'm looking forward to this team because you're talking about, look, you're giving, like, Seth Curry makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
On this team. Because his defensive deficiencies are covered up by the fact that he's going to be between Danny Green and Ben Simmons. You have Danny Green who, look, we talked a lot about, his decline and whatever in the playoffs, and like obviously the knee or the calf or whatever it was wasn't right, but he was still a good defender and really helped that Laker defense. Kind of, there was a reason he played so much, and it wasn't the fact that he was knocking down shots at the rate that we were used to. It's because of kind of what he did for that team defense, and that's what Doc is going to want him to do on this Clippers team, because they have two great individual defenders in Joel and Ben. But they need somebody on the wing that can kind of tie it together, the wing perimeter, who can kind of tie everything together and be in the right spot. And we all know about his transition defense, one of the best to ever do it.
Well, and here's the other thing with Danny, too. Even though he wasn't making shots in the playoffs,
you have to respect it.
You have to respect it. Guys still close out on him because over the course of the last 8 years, he's made 40% of his threes.
Right.
Like, even though he's going through a down rung, like, it's fine. He's still really, really good.
Perception matters as a shooter almost as much as what you actually do.
Yeah.
Especially when you're being tasked with give Joel and Ben room. Like, that's what you're doing. And I think this is going to be great for Tobias because guess what?
Yeah.
You're no longer asking Tobias Harris to be your best three-point shooter. That's not a role he's going to excel in. But guess what? As a good shooter, surrounded by better shooters, he's going to get more open looks because the rotation's not going to be keep on Tobias.
Yeah.
It's going to be keep on Seth, keep on Danny, keep on these guys. I love what they've done. You know, we're still going to have... They're going to have the questions to answer in the playoffs, but we know this is a good regular season team. They're going to be better on the road next year, I think, than they were, even if they take some slippage at home. But they make way more sense. They were close to this number last year when they made absolutely no sense. I like the over.
Well, like, here's the other thing, too. This team actually has some semi-decent depth now. Too. Like, right. That was a real struggle for them last year. Terrence Ferguson is, like, okay as an eighth man. Right. Like, Dwight Howard is a good backup center in the NBA. Right. And if Joel gets hurt, Tony Bradley is a good third center in the NBA. I think Tyrese Maxey...
Shake Milton becomes a backup now.
Shake Milton's a backup.
That you have to ask to do a lot. We know about Tybull. We know, you know, like, they've got some depth now.
Mike Scott like can said, hopefully turn it around and make shots, especially now that he might be a little bit more open this year. Like, mm-hmm. I think this is like a for sure over for me.
I feel very strongly about it. And if Maxey can give you anything as like your ninth, tenth guy,
yeah,
just to fill some minutes when maybe you need to rest Danny Green, because you know that's the they're gonna give some rest to guys, but like. I think the thing we've seen with they're
not going to rest Ben either.
They're not going to rest Ben, and they're not like Joel's not getting rested all the time. Like they're beyond that.
But even if he does, Dwight Howard is fine.
Sure,
like he's not Joel.
You can win regular season games that way,
right?
And you still have the spacing. I like this as an over. I'm with you. I think this team could be close to second in the East and win 48 games, 50 games.
Yeah, if you told me they went 50-22, I would not be stunned by any stretch. I think that is like a very real potential outcome for them. Miami Heat, 44.5.
Oh, I love this one too.
Do you? Okay. Let's jump through. I'm fascinated because this number scares the shit out of me.
Under.
Yeah.
I wanted this to be higher, I will admit. I don't love it as much as I thought I was going to because, like, I really wanted this to be, like, 46. Like, I really thought we were going to get post-finals, uber-inflated Miami Heat number. I think the Heat got worse. I think the Heat got worse this offseason, not hugely, but just like, I at best, they tread water. And here's the thing. Last regular season, they relied heavily on Kendrick Nunn. Heavily on him. I think his confidence is going to be shot.
Well, I also don't think he's all that good.
Well, he's not good. Either. He's not good. He's
not good.
But he played kind of out of his mind, and now his confidence is shot because you benched him all playoffs. That's hard for a young guy to go through.
Well, is there a chance that Goron plays more this year?
Oh, there is. There is, for sure. But I don't think he keeps up the bubble production. And also, like, they might have to, you know, plantar fascia stuff is weird. And hopefully he's back, and like, he was a great story in the bubble. I hope he continues to play better. And if he play, and you know, he's going to start, and that's an upgrade from Kendrick Nunn starting. I'm with that. But I don't think Mo Harkless does the same things that Jay Crowder does, or did for them. Because Jay Crowder was out of his mind in Miami.
He was really good. He was really, really good.
41%. He gave them so much defensively, like, they did that deal for Andre Iguodala, and then Jay Crowder became the best player by far that they got out of that deal. I don't really believe Iguodala is a regular season player anymore that gives you a lot. I think he's a guy that you want on your team for the postseason because of what he can give you, but like, he's not a guy I want to rely on for big minutes in the regular season. You know, Derrick Jones Jr. is another guy that they just lose some depth in the front court with.
Yeah.
And did a lot of things for them defensively. Avery Bradley's fine. But, like, I just don't think they got better. I think some of the teams around them got better, and they won 44 games last year. So, like, I think this is a solid under, because here's the thing. Like, Jimmy Butler is Jimmy Butler. I wrote a best and worst MVP bets column, and I think the worst future bet you can make in the NBA is Jimmy Butler 20-1 to win MVP. It's the dumbest bet you could make. Don't do it.
Okay,
he averages 26-6. He's not going to win MVP, first off.
So let me counter that. Oh, not the MVP thing, because I think, just generally, like, I don't think Jimmy Butler is going to win MVP. But Jimmy Butler is one of the few guys where we can assume he's going to play 72 games.
He's
going to
play a bunch. I'm with you.
Yeah. And Bam Adebayo is going to play 70 games, probably.
Sure.
Their two stars are going to play more than other teams' stars.
That's a fair point. I also am not a Tyler Hero believer.
Yeah.
I should have started with that.
Yeah, and like, I think Tyler's good. Don't get me wrong.
No, he's a good player, but like, I don't see the jump here. And so, like, when you're talking about, like, how are they going to climb up in this Eastern Conference kind of hierarchy business, like, they were an average-ish team in the regular season last year, and, like, they were, like, they dominated in the bubble atmosphere because, like, they were just mentally tougher than a lot of those teams, straight up. And I think there's a perception versus talent differential on this Miami Heat team that I think is just a little bit big. Now, I'm not, again, at 44.5, I think it's closer to right than I hoped it would be.
Yeah. I don't like this number, really. I'm not going to lie to you.
I do like the under here.
Yeah. I'm going to stay away from this number. I don't feel super great about it. Like, I'm just,
again, they're good. And, like, I guess I would, they're a good team. Like, they're a good team, and they're going to be a miserable team to play in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing. This is a team built to fucking piss you off in the playoffs. But I just, like, they don't, I just don't see it in the regular season as a team that's just going to, like, have a juggernaut type thing. Like, there's going to be nights where they look great, and there's going to be nights where Tyler can't hit anything, and they're asking him to do a lot because Jimmy doesn't want to do a lot in the regular season. Like, Jimmy doesn't want to be the guy that takes over every night. And there's going to be nights that they lose because of that.
But is there a chance that Jimmy sees this, like, weird season as a weird challenge in the same way that he saw the bubble and is like, fuck it, I'm taking over? Like, he's just a weird dude. Like, we can't predict dude, Jimmy Butler's performances.
Well, I don't know. Like, I feel like you kind of can. Like, you can pencil him for 26-6, which is a really good basketball player. He might be fringe all NBA because of what he does on both sides of the floor. Like, he's great. Jimmy Butler's a great player. And, like, if you're drafting guys for who you want on your team in the playoffs, he's pretty high on the list. But, like, I don't know. Like, I just look at this team, and again, like, I think part of this is I came into this hoping they would be overvalued, and they're not as overvalued as I thought they would be. But still, like, I don't think they're better than they were last year in the regular season particularly. And they went 44-29.
Yeah, I'm with that. I think I would lean, like, slightly under, but I'm passing on this one, I think, for sure. Like, I don't feel great about it.
I'm not going to sit here and, like, again, I like the Bucks better than this.
Yeah.
And the Sixers better than this, but
I strongly agree. Okay, let's go to Toronto.
Another one I love. This one I actually do love.
Yeah, Toronto went 53-19 last year. They lose Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol. They replace them with Aaron Baines and probably an increased role for
Alex Lynn.
Boucher. I was going to say Chris Boucher, but
Alex Lynn's good. He's a solid backup center.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I don't see this team losing 12 more games than it lost last year.
We're hammering them for playoff performance.
Yeah.
Guess what? Pascal Siakam's fine in the regular season.
Yeah, the inherent institutional knowledge of this entire program with all four of their leading scorers are back. It might be five of six also back. Like Pascal Siakam, Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet, Norman Powell. All still on this roster. OG Anunoby, still on this roster. Mm-hmm. Aaron Baines to Marc Gasol. Not a big drop-off, to be honest. I don't think Mark's washed, but like Mark was not nearly as effective as I think people thought he was
And Serge was awesome in the playoffs. Like, Serge carried them at times in the playoffs. But, like,
Serge was good in the regular season, too.
And he was good in the regular season. And so, like, that's a bigger loss to me. Than Gasol and like the big question here is like you replace your two versatile big men with Boucher is a guy that I think is going to play more just because of what he can allow them to do when they do all their weird defensive stuff and go zone and do weird stuff, but like you can't do as much of that with Baines and especially Len, so they're gonna have to play a little more straight up, but also like they're gonna be fine. Like, again, Siakam looked awful at times in that Boston series, don't get me wrong. He's got to figure out how to diversify his games because they sat on that spin move because they knew it was coming. And they baited him into taking bad post-up shots. Okay. This is a guy that's gotten better every year and learns from what people do to him.
Pascal Siakam was all NBA last year in the regular season.
He was incredible. And again, like he's going to come back and he's going to be like, okay, I'm going to look at this film and I'm going to say, okay, I got to get better in the post and get to my – how can I get to my spots more efficiently and in different ways? Because, okay, they're sitting on this spin move. I've got to have a Euro counter to that to where when I pump to the spin and the guy slides, now I step across him and I get to the rim easy. Okay, in the post, they're just banging me and begging me to take this little turnaround. What can I do? How do I pass out of this? How do I do that? Like, he's going to do these things and get better. But also, it's not a regular season problem. It's the same thing with the Bucks. Like, you're talking about postseason questions for a regular season win total. Over.
Yeah. I think this is 100%
And they have one of the best coaching staffs.
Yeah.
They're going to play hard. Like, that's always another thing with these win totals. It was a good point you made about the Heat one. It's like if you play hard, you steal games in the regular season.
Yeah.
And they're going to do that. Like, Kyle Lowry's going to be taking charges week three, opening night.
Guaranteed.
All season. He's going to be doing Kyle Lowry shit.
Guaranteed.
That's all he does.
Like, zero question. He is going to step in front of some dude and get destroyed. Because that's what he does.
He's going to be clapping.
I love it.
While the ref. Yeah. Let's go.
And like.
No, this one. I think this might be my favorite play on the board.
Here's the other thing. Kyle Lowry played 58 games last year. Fred VanVleet played 54 games last year. Siakam played 60. Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol, like, sneaky missed, like, 20 to 30 games each. Norman Powell missed 20 games last year. This team was hurt as shit last year. and they still won 53 games.
Yes.
This is deep. Yeah.
This might be the most ridiculous number I've seen.
I think this is my favorite number on the board as well.
I think BetOnline had it at 42 or 43 and a half, and I still locked it in.
Yeah.
I might drive up to the gate. It's 3.5 hours for me. Jeff Sherman, what's the max?
Oh, my God. I'm with you.
I'm a DM Jeff.
I'm with you. Like, this is – it's an absurd number. It's a completely absurd number.
And they're not going to be rattled by being in Tampa. No. They're going to be fine. They're going to – come on. No. Come on.
Not even
– I would be shocked if they don't win, like, 45.
Yeah.
Like, that would be pretty stunning. And that's 4 games over this. Come on.
No, I'm with that. Like, this team, I think, wins more games than Boston wins. And they have four – there's a four-win difference.
I would love that prop.
Yeah. You could probably get that for plus 200 right now, given the four-win difference.
Put the mortgage on it.
All right. The Indiana Pacers, they're over under 39.5.
This feels high to me.
So
I know, and here's the thing. The Pacers do this to me every year. I don't believe in them. And yet, here they are. They always win like 5 more games than I think they will. And so maybe I'm just not going to bet them. But I think they might be worse than the Hawks.
This is like a total stay away from me because I don't think they're worse than the Hawks. I'll just straight up say that.
I just think they could be. Because here's the thing. I'm concerned about Oladipo.
Yeah, so am I. I'm concerned about Oladipo. Like, Jeremy Lamb is still out, right? We don't know when Jeremy Lamb's going to be back. But if Jeremy Lamb is back by February or early March, that backcourt is Oladipo, Jeremy Lamb, Malcolm Brogdon, with Aaron Holiday as, like, your fourth guard. And, like, you can do some real shit with that backcourt.
I hear you. I just...
And Domantas Sabonis didn't play in the bubble.
Sabonis is
like,
awesome.
Sabonis is really good.
He's so good.
Miles Turner's really good. Like Justin Holiday was one of the best deals of the summer,
I thought. Can I ask you this? Can I ask you a question? Why does nobody want Miles?
Yeah.
Why will nobody trade for Miles? Like, what's the intel? Like I have never heard anything necessarily character wise. Like I've talked to the young man. He seems perfectly fine, nice. I've enjoyed it. Like, and like, I know that doesn't speak to everything, but I just don't get why nobody wants him. Like, he can shoot. He's a good defender. He doesn't fit with Sabonis, and I get that. And they've obviously been – and they kind of just had to be like, okay, like, Sabonis is our all-star. We're going to roll with him. But, like, Miles Turner – I feel like Miles Turner's been on the trade block for 3 years, and clearly nobody has approached them with anything good. And I don't understand why.
Well, I think part of it is that, like, teams don't want to trade for centers right now and give up, like, real assets for centers.
That's fair.
But
that's fair.
I agree with you. Like, Miles Turner in 2019 was one of the 5 best defenders in the NBA. He was
legit DPOY candidate.
Awesome. He shot 39% from 3 last year, or in 2019. In 2020, he was worse. And, like,
sure.
I get that. I think that there is.
He also was being told that they basically were like, we're putting you in the back seat. You know?
Yeah.
Like, he's playing in a weird role. And, like, I've talked to him about it, and he said it's kind of tough, but, like, he just does his thing. And, like, I don't get it. Because, like, I'm a big Miles Turner fan as far as what he can bring to a team. And, like, if you're talking about versatility and on both ends of the floor, like, he's got it. I just don't understand it. Like, I don't know. Like, Detroit signs 1 million centers. Like, try to trade for a good one. I don't know. Like, just somebody? Will somebody free this man?
Yeah, like... I'm trying to find, like, the landing spot, right? Like,
well, before Capella, I thought Atlanta should have gone after Miles.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I thought he was a perfect fit with Trey because, again, he can step outside in space. So I thought he was actually a good pairing with John Collins because they can kind of go inside, outside, do some things.
Well, and
switchable.
And Miles doesn't need to operate in pick and roll. Like, you want a center who doesn't need to operate in pick and roll in Atlanta and who doesn't just stand by the basket, like, in the dunker spot, right?
Right.
And Miles can do that. Like,
right.
I agree with you. That would have been a perfect fit for Atlanta.
It was a great fit. And then they went and got Clint. And I got it. But again, like, Clinton John is not ideal.
No. No, like, the team that, you know, I wonder if Giannis signs this Supermax. I wonder if Toronto takes a run at Miles.
Right, for kind of like Bam Adebayo-y defense.
Well, I think...
Because he's a different player, but, like, you need a versatile...
Well, I think he'd be the Serge Ibaka replacement.
Sure.
And, like, just kind of fit everything that Serge did for them, just be, you know, a better interior defender.
And better.
Yeah, and probably not as good of a shooter yet, but I think he'll get there.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. And, like, Nick Nurse would know what to do with him to get him into space. Like, I think that that's the interesting one to me.
Mm-hmm.
Is Toronto.
Okay.
Anyway...
This is stay away for you.
Right? This is a stay away for me because, like, I think they're actually talented. A lot of it comes down to how many games does Malcolm Brogdon play? Because Malcolm Brogdon's knees are always a concern. How many games does Victor Oladipo play? How many games does Jeremy Lamb play? Does TJ Warren, like, continue the bubble streak?
Is TJ Warren still good?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. What does Domantas Sabonis look like coming back from injury? How does Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis work whenever they might move toward playing more smaller lineups with TJ Warren at the four, which really worked in the bubble? Like, there are too many questions here that I think could go either way, not necessarily that I think That's are fair. All negative. I think this is a really talented team. Like, I think that they are awesome. Plus, we have the new coach factor with Nate Bjorkgren, where we don't have a great feel for that yet.
Yeah, my thing is, like, for whatever the issues were in the playoffs, like, Nate McMillan got everything out of these guys in the regular season. Like, every year. Like, he was pulling wins out of kind of nowhere. Like, they were always, like, three games over projections. I don't know. Like, I guess my concern is they still seem – and maybe this will change now that Oladipo has issued his trade request and very clearly kind of made it clear he doesn't want to be there. But when he came back, they handed him the keys again. And it didn't go well. Like, he was back to being the guy in late-game situations, and, like, that needs to be Brogdon.
I will say, like, Victor Oladipo, like, has not necessarily requested a trade. Just want to say that. But, you know, it seems very plausible that that could happen. Okay. Right.
It seems like he is not sure he wants to be there. We'll say that. But the thing is, like, they were back to, like, all right, Vic, like, be Vic. And, like, he wasn't able to do it. And I'm not sure he's going to be able to do it. I hope he can. But, like, those quad tendon things are bad news, man. Like, those are hard to come back from when you're an explosive guy like Vic. I don't know. That's my concern, is that they're gonna be, and maybe having a new coach in will bring fresh perspective, and he'll just go with whoever is giving them the best chance, and that could be it. But man, like, I just feel like they give him a lot of leeway, and that's good for him trying to come back, but I'm not sure it's good for winning as much as you can.
Yeah. But again, like, this is like one of those things where, like, we don't know. Right.
I'm with you. No, again, like, this is one where, like, I would like the under, but I have bet against the Pacers. Like, I think I've been against them, like, the last, like, 2 or 3 years and just been wrong. So I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to learn my lesson. And this is personal growth for me. Now, we'll get to the Orlando Magic, and I haven't learned my lesson there, but.
Yeah, no, neither have I.
They're coming up.
Yeah. I'm going to say. A slight lean over, but I'm staying away as hard as I can on that. The Atlanta Hawks, the number 36.5. They're basically saying Atlanta's going to go 500. Where are you on Atlanta? Because that would be a 17 win bump for this to go over.
You know me. I'm not a homer in any way here.
No.
I've been getting yelled at by Hawks fans for years.
Oh, no.
For not being a homer.
We were, like, heavy on the under last year because projected it at, like, 35 and a half, and we were like, no.
Yeah, it was preposterous. Yeah. And we were like, no, they are, like, the youngest team in the league, and young teams are bad.
Yeah.
They're not the youngest team in the league anymore. They have done a lot with this roster. I buy in on it. I think they can be a 7-8 seed in the East. This number at like BetOnline was like 35.5 juiced -160 to the over or something preposterous. So like, don't do that. But like at 36.5, like I think the number's right.
Yeah.
I think the number's right. I might even lean over. Now, part of that is like I think their guys are just gonna play. Like their best guys are gonna play. Now I'm interested to see how they manage this rotation, because like they have 10 guys that kind of have to play.
Yeah.
Based on where they were drafted or what kind of money they're making. Lloyd Pierce has his work cut out for him, but it's a better problem to have than when you were trying to figure out rotations with a bunch of young guys that didn't know their role. And this is something that I've kind of wanted to make clear about Atlanta that I think is going to help their young guys, even though they've added all these vets. People are like, oh, this is going to stymie development. And this is how I would push back on that.
Yeah, that's not true. I don't agree with that at all.
Cam Reddish, DeAndre Hunter, Kevin Huerter are not right now stars. Cam has probably the highest potential.
Agree.
But he's not there yet. But he was a very good defender last year. He's probably going to have to be their best. He's going to be their best wing defender. Like Cam Reddish, flat out. Like he's their best wing defender. And he's going to be tasked with that. But the thing that's nice about this year is they have defined roles for these guys. Cam Reddish is no longer going to be asked to be a creator because you have Bogdan, you have Gallinari next to Trey. Cam's not going to have that pressure on him. He can be a 3-and-D guy, which right now is going to give him the best chance to develop those particular skills, which are his strong suits, and develop those skills further. And there will maybe be some times where he can catch and put the ball in the deck when he, you know, somebody closes out on him. But he's not going to be like, they're not going to be like, all right, man, go do something. Same with Kevin Huerter. Kevin Huerter's not a creator. Like, he's not, that's not what he's good at.
That's what he likes to do.
He wants to do it, but he's not good at it. There's a difference. And now he's not really going to have that opportunity.
Oh, they're just going to run Kevin off the screens the whole
right,
time.
Right, which is not maybe not what he wants to do. But guess what? It's going to be what's best for the Hawks. And honestly, going to develop that skill better because now you have Bogdan and Gallinari and these guys who like you also have to pay attention to. When it used to be you locked in on him and you were like, don't let Kevin get open shots.
And
when he's not Kyle Korver. But, like, he's a good shooter.
Well, like, here's the other thing, too. Why do people think DeAndre Hunter was terrible last year?
Because he didn't score a lot.
But, like, he was a rookie, and look, he played a shit ton of minutes last year. Like, he played 32 minutes a night.
Right.
But, like, he was a rookie wing that played 32 minutes a night and averaged 12 points and shot 36% from three? Like...
No. And guess what? All he's going to have to do is play defense and shoot.
Yeah, and, like, DeAndre's limited as a ball handler and as a finisher. Don't get me wrong. But, like... He wasn't a disaster defensively. I think that the fact that Reddish...
The Hawks were a disaster defensively.
Yeah, I think the fact that Reddish jumped him defensively, because Reddish was really good, and jumped him in the rotation...
Everybody buried him.
Overstated how, like, not good DeAndre was defensively.
You know
like, DeAndre
was, you know what else it was
fine defensively
you
for
know what
a rookie.
What else it was the trade.
Yeah, it was. 100%.
It was what they gave up to move up to get him. And that got him buried. And it wasn't fair to him, you know. Like, but here's funny. Guess what? This is what the Hawks do to young guys, okay? You know? Marvin Williams, it's not his fault.
Yeah.
This is what the Hawks do, okay? Joe Johnson, it wasn't his fault they gave him all that money.
Yeah.
You signed that paperwork.
Joe Johnson made 7 All-Star games.
And he was awesome. But everybody was like, oh. Also, it's funny to think back that we used to freak out about 6 for $120.
Love it. Love it so much.
But yeah, but so like my thing about the Hawks is like you get Capella on the floor, who I think has been kind of the forgotten guy there. and he raises your floor defensively just because he's a competent rim defender, which is not something they've had.
Yeah. And Chris Dunn raises your floor defensively as well in the backcourt.
Chris Dunn was a really good pickup. He's a guy that him and Trey have had their battles. And I think that kind of warmed up the Hawks to him a little bit. And it was just a good signing. Like, buy low candidate, he's just a really good perimeter defender, and they need someone like that.
Well,
they didn't have anybody that could attack point guard.
And there's that, and there's the fact that the issue for them the last 2 years behind Trey has been who plays backup point guard. And like,
now you have two.
We can talk about Rajon Rondo being a playoff player versus a regular season player. Rajon Rondo is an enormous upgrade. Even bad season Rajon Rondo is an enormous upgrade over whatever Brandon Goodwin, semi-engaged Jeff Teague, Evan Turner at one point last year. Like,
to start the season.
Yeah. Like,
current assistant coach, Evan Turner.
Yeah. Like, that is the level to which the upgrade, they're going to be upgraded there is enormous.
They upgraded everywhere.
Having said that, 17 is a big win.
It's a lot of, it's a big lot of jump. Wins. Don't get me wrong. It's a ton of wins. But, like, I also look at the teams in their tier, okay?
Sure.
So, like, let's say you don't agree with me about the Pacers thing, and I can understand that. That's probably a hot take. I think the Hawks are firmly better, and, like, the number in Vegas agrees. Like, I think they're just firmly better than the other seven teams in the East. Like, I think their roster separates them. I think Washington's the closest, because I think, and we'll get to this, I think people are really underestimating how much Russ raises the floor of a team to, at worst, mediocre.
Yeah.
And we'll get to this next. But you're talking about an Atlanta team that's just like, I think they're going to be good. And again, the question here, and maybe this is where I should pump my brakes and why I don't think I'm going to necessarily say take the over, but I would lean potentially over, is again, you got to play a lot of teams from the West this year. That's a little scary, but I just think this is going to be a good team. Like, Trey is going to be more efficient because he doesn't have to do everything. They're going to be terrifying on offense. And if they can be competent defensively, which again would be a huge step, don't get me wrong, a competent defense is a playoff team for me, pretty firmly.
I think we're both slightly leaning over, but both passing.
Correct.
I think is where we're
that
at.
That was a lot of discussion about a team that we don't have a strong feel on.
Yeah.
For the win.
But it's a fascinating team. Like, they
It really is. They're one of, I would say they're one of the most interesting teams in the East for that reason.
Yeah.
And also I am not a Trae Young stan in any way, shape, or form. He has overperformed what I thought he was going to do coming out of the draft, and it's been thrilling to watch. I'm excited to see what he does this year, because we're going to learn an awful lot about Trey and what he can bring to winning basketball. Because now there's no excuses, right? We're going to learn a lot, and I'm interested to see it, and I hope it goes well. I've got some friends in that building. I hope it goes well.
The Washington Wizards, 32.5. I kind of like the over.
I'm 100% on board with you.
Yeah.
I'm 100% on board with you. This is a team that won 25 last year. They were awful. However, like I said, like, you're replacing Ish Smith with Russell Westbrook.
It's just an enormous leap. Like
I get that. Here's my thing about Russ. Russ is a floor raiser.
Yeah.
I'm on board with the idea that he might cap your ceiling as an elite team. Like, there might be a cap. He might not be a guy that you can have in a huge role on a championship team. I'm not sure that's in his current form, because he can't shoot. Like, it's just broken at this point.
But you know what? You know who can shoot?
Bradley Beal and Davis Bertans.
And Thomas Bryant.
And that's why I'm with you on this. Like, this team is even better built than the small ball Rockets, I think, for him offensively. Washington's going to be a disaster on defense. You know, it's funny. The Wizards are, like, to me, and this is mostly depth, not necessarily their top two guys. the Wizards are very Hawksy, but like less talented top to bottom on the roster. Like, they're going to be awesome offensively. And the question is, where is the floor defensively for this team? Because it could be ugly. Like, their wing rotation defensively could be real bad. And we're going to find, and I'm going to be interested. Bradley Beal was awful last year defensively, but he didn't have a reason to care. I want to see what the level of care is from this team on that end, because they just didn't try. Like, they were conscientious objectors to the concept of defense last year. Them and the Cavaliers.
Oh, we'll get to the Cavs too.
Okay. This year you have Russ. Russ brings a level of intensity. He makes you a solid team. They're going to be in the hunt for one of these. They're going to be in the play-in firmly.
Yeah, I agree.
They're going to be in the play-in. I think they're the 9 seed. And I like the over 2. I think they could win 34 games pretty easily.
Yeah, they could win 36. Like, they could go 36-36 very easily.
They could get up there. Because, like, look, like, Bradley Beal is a preposterously good basketball player.
Yes.
But he doesn't need the ball in his hands all the time. And I think he would like to not have the ball in his hands all the time like he did last year. And I think he'll be pretty excited to play with Russ.
They're projecting this to be a 6 games under 500 team with, like, actual 2 stars, by the way, in Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal. Like, regardless of what you think about Russ, like, Russ is going to make the All-Star game this year. He's going to average, like, 28 points, 8 rebounds, and 8 assists or something.
Yes.
Bradley Beal is going to average 28 points a game. Mm-hmm. Davis Bertans is a legit starting level NBA player now.
Mm-hmm. And a flamethrower.
An absolute flamethrower, to where Russell Westbrook will have better shooting than he's ever had around him, period.
Mm-hmm. Thomas Bryant can hit corner threes.
Yes.
At a good clip. He might not be a good defender. And again, that's the question with this team. That's going to be what caps them, because Russ isn't a really good defender at this point.
No.
And the best thing he does is gamble and go for steals, and now there's no one behind him to clean up the mess, and that's going to go poorly sometimes, but that's okay. They're going to be fun as hell to watch, and guess what? If you're the Wizards, that should be your primary goal.
Be fun.
Base level be fun. That's where I've been at with the Hawks for years. Be fun. Don't sign Dwight Howard. Be fun. That's a shot at both the Hawks and the Wizards. Don't sign Dwight.
Love it.
He doesn't make you fun. Orlando Magic, 31.5.
Okay, so we're both over on the Wizards. Yes. I probably will not bet that, but I'm close on it. Like, it's pretty tight. The Orlando Magic, this is an under for me. I'm selling the Magic. The only issue, the reason I won't bet it, though.
I've been selling the Magic for 3 years.
Oh.
Eventually, it's going to pay off.
Every single year, we go under on the Magic. Every single year. We've been doing this podcast for 4 years, I think. I think we've gone under on the Magic every single year. And we've been wrong,
believers.
Like, every single time.
I think last year, they were on pace to go under.
Like.
Because they were projected at, like, 500, which was preposterous.
I totally get why Orlando Magic fans hate me. Because
No, 100%. We hammer them every year in this podcast. But guess what? They lost their best player.
I mean,
shouts to Vucevic for just keep doing this thing. Salute to that man. Because look, that man's genuinely become a really good offensive player.
Okay, here's the reason that I won't bet this.
Okay, talk to me.
Even though I think they win, like, 28 games or so.
Mm-hmm.
Is because Steve Clifford is a
magician
icon. Like,
he is I don't know how he does it.
Yeah. Steve Clifford is one of the best coaches in the NBA.
I look forward to finding out how, without Jonathan Isaac, they're still a top 10 defense.
Yeah.
He's going to figure out a way to have him close.
Yep.
And it's going to piss me the hell off.
I have very few doubts that they're going to have a top 10 defense. Just because Steve Clifford, that's what he does.
He rolls out of bed and gives you that.
Yep. There is very little, very, very little concern about Steve Clifford putting together a defense that is going to be great. They've been 8th and 10th in defensive efficiency since he's been there. Even in Charlotte in 2018, they went 36-46 with that Kemba Walker team where Dwight Howard was playing 30 minutes a night for them, which was not great. Significant minutes. Like, they were playing Frank Kaminsky 25 minutes a night. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Lamb was not a high-level defender for them, let's say. Marvin Williams is not like a super high-level defender for them either. And they still finished like middle of the pack in the NBA in defense. Mm-hmm. They finished middle of the pack the year before in defense.
He's a warlock.
They finished 8th in the NBA in 2016, that year that they kind of exploded a little bit. They finished 9th the year before. Like, Steve Clifford is...
They finished 9th in a year Al Jefferson was, like, their best player.
Yeah. It's crazy.
How do you do that?
They finished 9th in defense with Al Jefferson playing 30 minutes a night at center.
What?
It's bananas.
Shouts to Al Jefferson.
Yeah, no talking shit about Al Jefferson, but,
I love Al Jefferson. His game was... He was a dominant old man at the Y moves post player.
I love it. So much.
Love it. But not a rim protector.
No. And
they were 9th.
They're still going to do it. Like, they're going to figure out how to defend.
However, offensively.
It's going to get ugly. I'm just kind of, like I said this on the last podcast I did about the Eastern Conference, I'm just kind of sick of watching the, like, Fournier-Vucevic two-man game.
Like, it's not good. And now, like, and here's the other thing is, like, the keys are in Fultz's hands completely. DJ Augustine's no longer there as a safety blanket.
Yeah.
They are handing Fultz the keys, and, like, I hope it goes well, but, like, they're going to ask him to do a lot.
Yep.
And that's going to, at times, that's going to take away from some stuff.
And then the other options are going to be Cole Anthony or... Like playing point Terrence Ross?
Oh no.
Like that. Or like point Fournier? Like it's going to be one of those two.
It would be point Fournier. Which again, nobody wants to see that.
Yeah, like.
No.
It's not great.
I'm out on the Magic.
Shout out Giannis Tima. Shout out Fran Vasquez. But yeah, no. I'm not.
Shout out to his family.
I'm not excited about the Orlando Magic. There's a world where this goes over because Steve Clifford is brilliant and a genius. And
for that reason, I'm gonna show respect and not bet it, but it's an under.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm staying away.
I'll pay my respects to Steve Clifford for once, but this would be an under for me if we're picking.
Chicago Bulls. 22-43 last year, so did not play up to 72 games.
No.
On pace to win like 25 or 24, mm-hmm. something like that. So this is a 6-win increase. This is basically a 6-win jump for Jim Boylan.
Which might not be wrong. They have a real life NBA coach.
No, I think it's right. Like, I think Jim Boylan cost them 10 games last year, probably.
I'm not kidding. They have gone from having like the worst coach in the last decade of the NBA.
Yeah.
To having a coach of the year.
Yeah. This might be a 10-game jump in coaching alone.
I'm not going to bet it because, like, I don't know. But I'm with you. Like, this is... Yeah. Like, I... Because, like, roster-wise, I don't know. Like,
I loved where they were last year.
No, we both had the over last year because we were like, look at this roster.
Yeah.
This is a possible playoff team.
Yeah.
And then Jim Boylan was fucking Mr. Magooing it up. And they couldn't do anything. And, like, Otto didn't play and all that. And, like, Otto, please, man, it's a pandemic. Just lock it up, man. But anyway.
If Otto Porter plays, by the way, in the, like, how many minutes has Otto Porter played for the Bulls? I can pull it up real quick. He's played like 700 minutes for the Bulls so far in his career.
It's not a lot.
They've been even. Like, if you look at his over-unders, in the minutes he's played, they've been even with their opponent.
Because he's a good player.
He's really good.
He's like their second best player.
Yes.
And he doesn't play.
Yes.
Because he's hurt all the time. If he's healthy, this is probably an over.
Yes. I think if he's healthy, this is an over. I really do.
You know what I would love to take? We talked about this earlier. I would love a Bulls versus Magic.
Yes, I would too. 30.5 versus 31.5. I think that
Bulls like EV, like what, probably like plus 100?
Yeah, something
Chicago.
Like that.
Give me Chicago. Let's buy, you know what? Let's go to Crazy Town. They have adults in the room now.
Yeah.
And not like a adult trying, like a fake adult who's trying to be too much of an adult. Have you heard my favorite, the only good training camp quotes are Zach LaVine not so subtly shitting on Jim Boylan.
Oh my God.
They are my favorite genre. He's like, yeah, we're like moving on offense this year. Like they ask, like, what's the biggest difference? They're like, he's like a lot more movement. It's fucking hysterical.
A plan.
we have plays that weren't driven, you know, scribbled on the back of a cocktail napkin.
Oh, man.
Jim Boylan's entire playbook was just written on the back of Ditka Steakhouse napkins.
Oh, man. Like, this team has real talent. Like, Kobe White was really good to close the year. Zach LaVine was good last year. Shouts out to 480.
We all love Wendell.
Wendell is good. Like, Wendell in this scheme should be good. Lowry in this scheme should be good.
You know, I've been doing this, like, most important player on every team thing. That'll be running either, I think, this weekend.
Yeah.
For the Eastern Conference. And, like, my thing with the Bulls is, I was like, it's Lowry. Because, like, he was so good 2 years ago.
Oh, I think it's definitely, like, Otto Porter. Then, for this season particularly, well, I think it's definitely Otto Porter.
For me, it's Lowry because from a this season and long-term perspective, like, because they got to figure out what to do because he's an RFA.
Yeah.
So for me, that's why I picked him because, like, I'm with you. Like, Otto is the one that triggers how they win. But I think long-term, like, they got to figure out what to do with Lowry. And, like, he was so good 2 years ago. And then, like, last year was a disaster for everybody. And, like, you have a real coach who's going to have, like you said, a plan for how to use guys. This is exciting. A new front office trying to evaluate guys. So I think him long-term, like, he was my pick. I'm with you. Like, Otto is the one that unlocks winning for this team. But, like, his question is, like, is he healthy? Markkanen's more like, how good are you? And that's, to me, the more interesting guy. I guess I should call it the most interesting player on each team.
Well, we're just game planning here.
I might tweak that headline before that goes up.
All right, so we're both over tentatively. I'm staying away from this, to be honest.
I'm staying away, but I lean over. Again, this is all, like, it's, you got to tell me how many games Otto plays.
Yeah, that's it for me, too. How many games does Otto Porter play? The Charlotte Hornets, 25 and a half. This is a very young team. Mm-hmm. This is a team that went 23-42 last year. Mm-hmm. But if you look at their expected win-loss, it was 19-46.
Right. They played over their heads, especially early in the season when Devontae was, like, going nuts.
Yeah.
They were, like, 500 for a little bit, and we were like, what?
They bring in Gordon Hayward, and I actually kind of sneaky like that move. Like, he is a ceiling raiser for them.
Sure.
But I think this number's high.
I agree. I think BetOnline had it closer to like 27.5. So shop this.
Yeah.
As always, shop your numbers if you can. Here's the thing, and I talked about this with Brad Rowland, which is if they do what they should, which is put the ball in LaMelo Ball's hands for 32 minutes a night.
Oh, it's not going to go well.
This is an under. And that's what they should do. He's your future. Let him work through it. Because Gordon's not going to need the ball. Like, that's kind of the reason I think people like that move is, like, he can work with LaMelo. Like, he's a secondary creator, give you a spot-up guy.
Well, they have three ball handlers on the court at once. They can have LaMelo, Gordon, and Devontae all handle the ball, and they're all complementary of one another, and it will foster LaMelo's development. And, right. Like,
but
here's just the thing, though. This is a very young team now in terms of who is going to get their minutes.
Yes.
It's going to be LaMelo Ball, PJ Washington, Miles Bridges, Devontae Graham, Cody Martin probably gets a substantial amount of minutes. Like, Gordon Hayward and Terry Rozier and probably Cody Zeller to an extent. Mm-hmm.
Those are your three. Yeah, they've been talking about how they like Zeller, but
those are your vets. And Malik Monk, too, will get minutes as well. Like, Malik, I should mention that off the bench.
Yeah.
But that's just a really young roster in terms of where your offensive usage is coming from. I think that this is, like, kind of a Hawks situation from last year.
Right. Yep, I'm 100% on board with you. And you, like, we talk about this all the time. Like, young teams just don't win games. That's what they're trying to learn how to do. is they're trying to learn how to win games, and you end up losing some because you make mistakes and you don't get to the right shot and you don't get to the right spots. And defensively, like, they're not a good team. And yeah, like, under. I think this is a pretty good. And again, this is one of those teams that I think is hurt a lot by this. You play a lot of West teams.
Yeah.
You know? I agree. Like, these next, them, the Knicks, and the Cavs, I think are hurt the most by that.
Yeah. If you can get this at 27.5, I actually would bet this under.
Yes. 25.5 is a lean.
Yeah. It's more of a lean for me. The Detroit Pistons at 23.5.
This is one I kind of sneaky like.
I kind of want. Like, I'm not betting this because you're betting so much on Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose staying healthy or not staying healthy.
Yes.
And that's just a dangerous ideal.
It's terrifying.
So I'm definitely staying away from this because I don't trust either of those human beings to stay healthy and, frankly, to, like, stay on this roster long term.
Right. No, I'm with you.
But if they're on the roster, it's an over. If they're not and they're not playing, it's an under. Like, I can't make it more simple than that, right?
Yeah. I think it's an over just because I think even if they're on the roster till the trade deadline, that's enough to win them too many games. You know, like, I mean, like you said, like, Blake 2 years ago was ridiculous. And I don't know if he can get to that level again, but if he's anywhere approaching that, this is way too low. Like, he dragged this team to an 8 seed and then killed himself in the playoffs trying to play through it.
Yep.
Kind of ruined maybe his career.
Like, they can close with Killian Hayes, Derrick Rose, Blake Griffin, Jeremy Grant, and like a fifth guy. And maybe Mason. Yeah.
Like, that's a really big lineup.
It's a big lineup. That's why I'm saying the maybe East Mason.
Is big man.
But like, they have DeLon Wright, who's like sneaky, a good, solid NBA player. Like, this team has a lot of, like, good NBA players and established good NBA players to where I don't feel comfortable betting this number because you can't tell how healthy they're going to be. Like, I honestly kind of just think it's a simple conversation to have on them. Like, if Blake is healthy and Derrick Rose is on this, if they're both on this roster long term, they really might challenge for the play-in series and could, like, end up in the playoffs as the 8 seed.
Sure.
So I just can't, I can't.
It's hard to advocate for it. I think I like it maybe a little more than you. I'm with you. Like, it's scary. Can we have a real quick discussion about Jeremy Grant? I'd like to just say something here.
Go ahead. Give it to me.
Back in 2016, a young man by the name of Kent Bazemore was given a very large contract. And he was given a very large contract by an Atlanta Hawks team that wanted him to go from being a role player who fit a role and did it very well to being a starring player. And it did not go well. Jeremy Grant was offered, according to reports, close to, if not the same money, to continue playing the role he excelled in Denver. He chose to go to Detroit under the guise of getting an expanded role. Jeremy Grant is not a shot creator. He's never been very good at it. His shooting percentages after more than like two dribbles plummets. Jeremy Grant had a great role in Denver. And, like, I'm sure there's no players listening to this, but if you're out there, if you can make the same money to play a role you excel in, I understand everybody wants to be a star. But here's the thing that comes with that. You're going to get buried if you're not good. And I worry for Jeremy Grant he's going to get buried because his numbers just aren't going to be there to justify the contract. If he was on that contract in Denver where doing what he was asked to do, nobody would care if the numbers weren't there. Nobody would care. You were in the closing lineup. You were their top wing defender. You were a really good spot-up shooter and cutter. You were playing with a savant who found you in the right spots at all times. Now you go to Detroit. You're going to be asked to do a lot because you're making that money. And that's what you wanted. beware of the Bays.
Yeah.
Because you might be contract filler in a year and a half.
Beware of the Bays. I love that. You should literally, that should be a headline. Beware of the Bays.
I've been trying to, and maybe I'll write this, because like I've been trying to figure out how to write it and be not like, not bury a guy.
Yeah.
But like, because I don't want to do it. Because like, again, like I said with the Joe Johnson thing.
But Kent Bazemore got traded like 6 times, it felt like.
He did.
And nobody wants that.
And nobody wants to do that. And now Baze is on the minimum in Golden State, and I think he's going to be really good there. I think that's a sneaky good pickup. Because here's the thing, Baze was good for Sacramento at the end of the year. He's just not $17 million a year good for what he does best, because when you have somebody who makes that much money, usually you're going to ask them to do more than they're maybe capable of. Jeremy had fallen into maybe the perfect situation in Denver where they were willing to pay him like a star to be a role guy. That should be the dream. That was how he was going to keep making all this money. Now I'm worried he's going to go to Detroit. He's going to be asked to do a bunch. He's going to shoot 36% from the floor. He's going to take too many off the dribble threes, and his three-point percentage is going to go down. He's going to be on a worse team defense. And he might become a guy in 2 years that's getting dealt on an expiring, and then his next deal is going to be lower. Because people think, okay, well, he just fell off. Yeah. When really he was just in the wrong role.
Yeah.
And, like, I wish – and, I don't, it's hard as a player. I understand, again, like, I talk about this. Like, I love guys who are confident in themselves. But also, if you're an agent, if you're whoever, like, try and maybe steer them in a better direction if you can see this coming.
Some guys want the ball in their hands. You know? Whatever.
And well, it's hard to tell them no. But yeah. Guess what? You can't get mad when all of a sudden you're getting shit on because you're just not doing as well.
Let's go to the New York Knicks. We both have that as a over, but like, you know, maybe
over, but it's scary.
Yeah, and I'm not anywhere near betting that.
Spooky season.
Yeah, the New York Knicks, 22.5. So they won 21 games in 66 last year because they did not participate in the bubble. This is like a definite under. To me.
Oh, hammer it.
Yeah.
They got way worse.
Yeah.
And they were really terrible. I think this is the worst team in the league pending OKC selling off more folks.
Yeah, I think that Cleveland still is bad. But like Marcus Morris, like sneaky kind of carried them to a few wins early in the season.
That's what I'm saying. Like early on, like they had Marcus Morris gone, Bobby Portis gone, Taj Gibson gone. I'm not saying those are like great players. Marcus Morris was out of his mind.
Yeah.
But like those are guys that are like solid.
Damian Dotson gone. Wayne Ellington gone. Maurice Harkless started 10 games for them near the end of the year. He's gone.
Yep. I feel extremely bad for RJ Barrett. They have not put the young man in a position to succeed it once again.
Yeah. I mean, look,
there's no spacing for him.
Yeah. Yeah,
what does RJ Barrett want to do? He wants to go to the rim.
Slash and drive.
That's all he's got. And what have you done to this poor young man? You put Elfrid Payton next to him again? Who's their best shooter?
Emmanuel Quickley, probably. He can actually shoot.
Okay.
Like, he's a great shooter. That's like the one thing he can do at an NBA level. Okay.
But look who else is on this roster.
Where's
Julius Randle want to be?
At the rim.
Mm-hmm. Can Kevin Knox shoot?
Nope.
Obi Toppin might be able to shoot a little bit.
Obi Toppin might be able to shoot. That might be a really good pick and roll partner for RJ Barrett. And I'm excited to see it.
You have 37 Kentucky players on the roster. They're also all CAA. What's Dennis Smith Jr. do best? Don't say nothing. That's mean. Let's go to the rim.
Yeah.
Can Michael Kidd-Gilchrist shoot?
Nope.
No. Can Frankie Ice shoot? He's okay. Here's the thing. I was advocating before the Chris Dunn thing. I've been advocating for years the Hawks bring Frank in, Frankie Smokes, and put him next to Trey as basically the Chris Dunn guy.
Yeah, I'm in on that.
I wanted that because my favorite thing is in summer league. Frank used to put Trey in like the figure four at midcourt.
Yeah,
I loved it. Anyway, Austin Rivers is fine. I don't hate that.
Are you ready for Nerlens Noel, like, 18-footers on repeat?
Here's the thing. I was so excited for Nerlens. I thought he was really nice last year for OKC. I really wanted him to go somewhere good where he could contribute in a role that was going to, you know, like I'm talking about with Jeremy Grant, maximize his talents. He did not.
Because, like, the sneaky thing is, like, Nerlens wants to shoot those. And Nerlens will probably be asked to shoot those in New York.
Reggie Bullock can shoot. He's still there.
Yeah. I hope he can get on the court.
But, like, I feel bad for RJ. Like, we all knew what he wasn't good at coming out of the draft.
Yeah.
Like, everybody talked about this, and he ended up in the one place that refuses to build anything around him to allow. Like, here's the thing. I understand the Knicks didn't do a disaster this offseason. Like, they didn't spend a bunch of money on guys they shouldn't. But at the same time, like, they didn't do smart moves to benefit their young guys.
Yeah.
That's the issue. Like, it's one thing to, like, oh, like, they didn't blow their cap space. It's like, okay.
Austin Rivers might sort of kind of help them.
I think Austin Rivers was a good pickup. I think that was fine.
Alec
Burks is fine. But, like, you just didn't give the guys that you need to be cornerstones.
Well,
top 10 picks.
And here's the thing. They're going to give those young guys the ball, too.
They are, but they're not giving them the ball with guys around them that can help.
Right, but that's point my here issue. For the under. Like,
oh, no, 100%. They're going to give the young guys the ball, and it's going to be bad.
Yeah. And Tibbs, like, maybe Tibbs just decides, we're going to give Alec Burks the ball because I don't like young players. But, oh, God, that would be bad.
I want to say, I can't wait for Knicks Twitter when Alec Burks is closing games and RJ's on the bench.
It's going to be bad. It's going to be really bad.
And guess what? Alec Burks still isn't going to win them the games.
Okay,
they're just going to lose by 4 instead of 10.
Oh, God. Let's go to the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is sad with the Knicks. Like, I don't want to talk about the Knicks anymore. I'm done. The Cavs, okay. 22.5. I mean, I don't like this roster at all.
You can talk me into the under.
Yeah, I think it's the under for me.
Pretty easy. I don't like it as much as the Knicks.
I don't either.
But
The more I think about it, the more I don't like it. Because, like, Kevin Love and Andre Drummond, for what they are still, like, useful.
Right. Okay, here's a sneaky one. Go find your local establishment has player props and take Andre Drummond over rebounds per game. He's going to clean up because they can't shoot.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Hammer it. I think he could average 15 plus.
That's your Cavs bet.
That's my Cavs bet. Andre Drummond over rebounds per game. Look at this. Look at this roster. They got some guys that's going to put them up. I mean, look, here's the thing. I like Colin Sexton. He's been good.
So do I.
He's been getting better. I like that. Darius Garland? We'll see.
Kevin Porter? We'll see.
Kevin Porter, he's got his off-court stuff.
And Kevin, by the way, was really good last year. Like, I think there's that Kevin is, like, maybe their best long-term prospect.
I have seen the takes. But other than that, I mean, you got Jetty's still there. Kevin Love is still there. Okoro is going to play, and that's not a shooter. They're going to give the young guys a lot of room. Again, like, Kevin Love and Andre Drummond, and, like, their front court's pretty solid. Like, JaVale McGee is a solid backup center. And, like, I have to imagine he gets traded at some point. But, yeah, I mean, like, it's really my belief in this under would really come down to how long everybody's still on this roster that's, like, decent and a veteran. Because, like, I don't know. Like, do they try to move Andre Drummond on the expiring? Or, like, what are they doing with all this?
Yeah. See, like, for me, again, it comes down to the fact that the guys who are going to be handling the ball,
sure, are young.
Are going to be very young again. If they're smart, right? Like, they should
100%.
Give Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, Kevin Porter, like, all of the free reign. They went out and signed Damian Dotson, who's, like, kind of sneaky, not terrible in ball screens, by the way. But, like, they should give those guys the ball and say, hey, we need you to do something. And I don't know if they're efficient enough to do anything with it yet, to be honest.
I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm just saying, like, again, like, the back line is kind of good enough to keep them close to this number, I think. Yeah. But I'm with you. Like, I like the next one better, but I would lean under here as well.
I agree. So, to recap, both of us really like the Bucks over 49.5.
Correct.
We're passing on the Celtics, but under if we had to lean. Both pass, but under on the Nets. For the Sixers, we are both pretty strong on the over.
Mm-hmm.
For the Heat, you're under pretty firmly. Like, I'm more of a pass on them.
Okay. Yep, that's correct. I probably won't bet it. I should say that. I probably won't bet it, but, like, I do, like, just because I have a lot of other things I like a little better.
Yeah. The Raptors is our favorite.
Yes.
Raptors over is our favorite on the board. Our disagreement is on the Pacers. We're both passing, but Robbie under,
for
me.
Different reasons.
Me over. The Hawks, we're both slightly over. I think 36 is, like, the number, basically.
Right.
So we're passing.
I think the number is right here.
Both over for the Wizards?
Yes.
Are you betting that, or are you passing?
I actually might bet that. I kind of like that.
I might bet it.
Again, I haven't put my whole card together yet, but yeah. I do like it.
That's tough.
Because, like, I try to limit myself on over-unders. But I will say this, like, I like so many more in the East than I do in the West. Like, there's going to be, like, two that I actually bet in the West tops.
Yeah. The Orlando Magic, we're both under, but we're staying away out of respect for the Orlando Magic gods and the Steve Clifford.
That's correct.
Temple. The Chicago Bulls, we're staying away, but we both lean over due to the Jim Boylan catastrophe being replaced.
Correct. And just Otto Porter questions is why we're staying away.
Yeah. The Charlotte Hornets, we're both under.
If you can get it 27.5, bet it.
Yes, but 25.5, we're probably going to pass.
Yeah, it's just, that's real low.
The Pistons, we just are passing totally due to health reasons.
I like the over a little better than you, but again, I'm not going to bet it.
Yeah.
But I would not hate betting it because, like, if their guys play, I think that's so low, even if they trade guys at the deadline.
The Knicks, that's
betting
an under. That's a bet.
The under.
Yeah. And then the Cavs, I think I am going to stay away just because that whole situation makes me sad.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. Yeah, I'm not betting it, but I do lean.
Like, I don't think that I want to.
You don't want to have investment in the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, it's kind of where I'm at. Like, I don't want to have to watch Cavs games, really. Like, I will, because it's my job, but, like, I don't want to have to be forced to watch Cavs games.
Right.
I think is where I'm at. Okay. Right. We will be back later this week with the Western Conference over, unders. Robbie, tell the people for this podcast where they can find your work.
You can read me over on UpRocks, Dime Mag, all that good stuff. We got, you know, preview business coming out. And if you are into the gambling space, the Puntcast. We do college football and golf, mostly. Me, Tom Fornelli, Chip Patterson, my former CBS colleagues. You can subscribe to that wherever you listen to podcasts, like this one, which is a better one.
Shout out to the New Orleans Pelicans. They have just brought Gar Forman in as special advisor.
That's right. For scouting.
Oh, boy. Gar, by the way, if you look at Chicago's track record as in terms of purely their draft record.
Not done terribly in draft.
It is totally fine.
I don't, as long as that's all they're asking him to do, it might not be the worst thing, but it is just funny.
Yeah.
Objectively.
Okay. This has been the Game Theory Podcast. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe, do everything you can to support the show. We will be back later this week with the Western Conference win total over-unders. Until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.